So the first question I have for you, sir, is how did you get into the blues? Who were some of the people that you were listening to when you were growing up in Ontario?
So it's kind of interesting. I started when I was seven just doing actually jazz, and I started off doing a lot of the Rat Pack stuff. My grandparents really got me into Frank Sinatra, and I remember hearing Fly Me to the Moon, and that was it. I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. So I actually started as a jazz singer, and that'll lead on to why I traveled around and did all that, but I ended up being into jazz first, and then once it wasn't cool to be a solo jazz singer anymore, I was looking for something else, and I ended up taking a trip to Nashville with my dad, and we went to B.B. King's Blues Club, and showed up there 3 days in a row, and the last day I was there, we ended up talking with the manager, and I ended up getting a lunchtime show, and at this point, I didn't know the blues at all. And I'd heard quite a few names, but I didn't really know any of the material. And I ended up playing a show, and I was invited back, but I had to get back to Canada. I only had 3 days in Nashville, which really sucked. And they actually offered me a slot to open for B.B. King.
Wow.
That December. It was December 9th, and I'll never forget it. And about a month before the show, probably 3 weeks before the show was going on, we got a notification, email from the manager saying that their restaurant had just been slapped with a new bylaw that anybody that was under the age of 21 wasn't even allowed to come in with a guardian because it was actually they were selling tobacco in the venue. So it wasn't the drinking laws, it was actually the tobacco laws. They were selling pipe tobacco and cigars and everything there, and I was super disappointed. And he offered a chance for me to come back, but at the time we couldn't really afford it, and I had to go back to school. So it was that was a huge blow, and that ended up that led me to become obsessed with B.B. King.
And you were how old at that point?
Absolutely obsessed. I was 16.
16, okay.
And that was, it was something that just happened so fast, and I was so flattered that they enjoyed what I did. And I actually played a couple original tunes.
You kind of alluded to performing internationally since you were 6 or 7 years old, and you were just performing jazz?
Yeah, I was basically singing. I would go on variety shows. Do you remember the Jenny Jones show?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so I wasn't one of the boot camp kids. I always joke about that. She always did these boot camps for kids that talk back to their parents too much.
I remember that.
But it was a variety show at Christmas, and I remember being getting the call. I had an agent at the time, and we were sending out all these promo packs and all this stuff, and I was so excited because I got to go to Chicago, and it was that's the first time that I got to play in the States. And then it was I did a few things after that, travel around to Canada a lot, all the different parts, and had a great time. And I can't wait to get back to the States more, though.
How do you get involved in that at such a young age? Was Jenny Jones kind of the first thing for you, or?
Well, that was, I think I was 9 when that happened, and I started when I was 7. It was just something where it literally started out performing at retirement homes and community centers. And I realized, though, that those people that were older than myself had a respect for music and a certain kind of value for music that I didn't really understand. And I loved music. Since I was a kid, my parents would always make sure that I was around music. They took me out to shows and just made sure that it was always there. But at the same time, I realized that even if you're playing for, a retirement home or a senior's home, you have a captive audience, and that music actually really means something to them.
Yeah.
So it's getting the awesome feeling that you're making somebody happy by doing something that's making you extremely happy at the same time. So then after that, it was just the type of thing where my parents would say to me, they never pushed me too much, but they would say, when this isn't cool anymore, you tell us. You don't want to do it, you pull the plug. And it just kind of kept building. And the more that I traveled, the more I kind of had the bug for it. And I just wanted to do it. But then, I hit 14 and my voice changed majorly. And I remember that moment where I was on stage, my voice dropped, and it was this is a nightmare. I can't do this anymore. So then my parents gave me a guitar, and they said, if you don't want to sing, then, try this and maybe give it a shot. And I had a great guitar teacher at the time, too, that was not so much into blues, but slipping a lot of classic rock and stuff like that. So I started to learn, the blues scale and just some of the basics. And then as soon as I took an interest in the blues after being, to Nashville and back, I had a friend in high school where, we would kind of skip class some days, and we would just hang out in the music room, and he would teach me everything that he knew. So all his, he loved Chuck Berry, absolutely loved Chuck Berry, so he'd show me all of that stuff, and B.B. King, and Muddy Waters, and Buddy Guy, and, so I was kind of exposed to a group of friends that liked the same kind of stuff, and then I went on to college, and I was kind of an oddball. There wasn't really a lot of kids that liked the blues right. or listened to it. London, Ontario wasn't really much of a blues scene. And so the chance that I could get to Toronto, you know, to a bigger city, that's where it all kind of changed.
So kind of talk me through then getting your current band together.
So as soon as I moved to Toronto, I started going to different open stages and jams. And I just thought, you know, this would be a good way to meet people mm-hmm. And try to get connected. Because it's a pretty big city, and I find that there's certain niche areas. Like there's mm-hmm. blues in one area, there's, you know, the DJs in a certain other area. You know, it goes on. But then at this open mic, it seemed like it was just a bunch of everything. And I found two guys that were really, really killer. I thought were really, really kind of unique players, mm-hmm. a really interesting bass player, and a really kind of eccentric drummer. And we ended up just becoming really good friends by hanging out at that jam regularly. And then we started to rehearse and we started to, you know, have an interest in booking a few gigs. And of course, like your first few gigs in Toronto, especially, or I guess any big city, you end up playing a lot of stuff where you get ripped off and you play these bills with five other bands and, you know, maybe your roommate comes out or maybe they leave by the time you're done, you know, God forbid. But it's like, that was like, I got back to my performing roots and I hadn't really felt that kind of rush since I had been, you know, traveling around singing as a kid. And I thought, you know, let's kind of give this a go again. And, you know, I had a part-time job at the same time. I was working at the Hard Rock Cafe in Toronto, doing a lot of their music playlists and mm-hmm. performing in that cafe part-time. So I made sure that, you know, I could at least pay some rent and buy groceries, and I was living with my girlfriend at the time too, so that helped.
And is that the girlfriend that turned into your wife, or is this a different
girl? It is, yeah. She was my high school sweetheart, and
wow,
we've been
awesome.
Together 10 years this June.
Wow.
And married 1 year June 30th. So
that's incredible. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
It's been a lot of fun. It's been a great year.
Yeah. So she's in your band is what I'm alluding to. She plays the keyboard, right? Your piano?
Yeah, she's actually classically trained. She's got her bachelor's degree in piano.
Wow.
In classical. So then she's always been into classic rock and some jazz and stuff like that. And as soon as we started talking about blues, it's been a great kind of journey together, discovering a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
And I feel like we've kind of, you know, stumbled upon all this great music together. And I mean, she's like my vinyl hunting partner. We've got this record collection that we don't have any room for in this one bedroom apartment, but we don't care. It's like guitars, keyboards, and records. But she, you know, learning the blues was like teaching her a lot of bad habits, and there was stuff where she was just playing way too well, and it's like, no, it can't be classy. You got to get down and dirty. And so she started listening to, you know, Otis Spann and Johnny Johnson and you know, Pine Top Perkins, all those people that play a little bit dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've had a blast. So, I mean, we're so lucky to get to do this. And I know a lot of people that they have to do it on their own, especially people who tour and people who travel. And I think being away from your family has got to be the hardest thing in the world,
oh,
no matter what you do business-wise. But music industry especially, because it can be so up and down. But I think having somebody by your side
mm-hmm.
is every day I wake up, I'm extremely thankful.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that completely. So I know that you, besides being, you know, a talented guitarist and singer as well, you're an awesome songwriter. I really like a lot of your original stuff. Can you tell me kind of what goes into writing an original blues song?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's I started writing music when I was in high school and I was getting bullied really bad.
Mm.
And I wasn't an athlete by any means. And I'd hang out, like I said, in the music room. So I wasn't the coolest kid in school, and I decided that the best thing to do would just be to, instead of, you know, fight back at it, I decided to write it down. And my parents were always telling me, just write everything down, you know, so I did that. And at first it was like poetry, and my dad would kind of mess around with poems and songs too, so I was kind of exposed to that when I was young, and I thought, well, it can't be that hard. And then I realized that looking back at how many songs I think I've written now, probably close to 400 to 450 songs,
wow.
I'd say. And it's the type of thing where you look back and you think, God, that's terrible. You know, like, what was I thinking? Why did I think anybody would ever want to hear that, you know, those words together, whatever it might be? But then you realize that it's fun to reflect on it, but you have to keep practicing it. And I personally find I write folk songs, I write rock songs, I write pop songs. I don't like to be kind of boxed into any kind of genre. Whatever mm-hmm. I feel I want to put my energy into at the time, I will. But writing blues, in my opinion, has got to be one of the trickiest things that I've encountered. And it's this thing where you don't want to be cliche.
Sure.
There's only kind of so many ways you can reinvent the wheel, so to speak. And it's like, You don't want to step on any of your influences' toes and directly rip anybody off. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, especially as a guitar player, people who play lead guitar, it's like they always want to sound like themselves. They don't want to sound like their idol, but they want to sound like they're getting their influence from somewhere. With songwriting, it's the same way. So I look at people that I really like, and like Willie Dixon as a blues songwriter, he's the man. You know, he's the legend. Led Zeppelin can thank him, but it's like, you look at how prolific he was, and I try to sit down and write one three-verse blues song, you know, three verses, two choruses, and a solo, and that might take me, you know, 2 weeks or a month to actually be happy with something, whereas I could write a folk song in an afternoon. It's like, it's tough to strip things down and make sure that you're actually saying something at the same time.
Right. Because, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, basic blues songs. There's a lot of things you can just say, oh, my baby left me, I got no money.
Yeah.
But you're right.
And
like,
hey, that's great. I mean, I hear, like, Jimmy Vaughn play something like that, and he just does it so well that it'll knock you dead. But there's some people that it's like, you could say more with that.
Sure.
You know, and express yourself more, I don't know, more originally. And if I can strive to do that, that's always a goal.
Absolutely. Say you released a new EP earlier this year called Memphis Midnight Sun. And I understand that was actually recorded at Sun Records, which is obviously in Memphis, historic building. So what was that like to record there?
Oh, that was a dream come true. I first went to Memphis last October, actually, sorry, 2 years ago in October. Mm-hmm. And I had never really experienced a place like that before. It's kind of spooky. It's a bit of a ghost town when you're not around the tourist areas. And it's to be honest with you, as somebody who lives in Toronto, looking at a place like Memphis and seeing the poverty and seeing, you know, the hardships that people face.
Absolutely.
I don't think a whole lot has changed over time in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because of that, there's a certain grittiness and a certain attitude to the music there. And there's something so authentic and genuine about it. And Sun Records, you know, going to see that tour and going through that studio. Stax is amazing too, by the way, but Sun is all original. And taking that first tour, I thought, I've never been in a place that's given me goosebumps like this, to know that there's all this stuff that ended up becoming so popular in Western culture was invented right here. Like the best recordings in the world, in my opinion, were done right here. I love Howlin' Wolf, personally, one of my favorites. And I mean, he did his first stuff with Sam Phillips before, you know, Chess put it out. And few people realize that was done in Sun as well. So Sun, not only being a rockabilly and rock and roll kind of mecca, was a huge part of the blues story as well, especially electric blues. So I thought, I have to come back here. I didn't get enough time the first time I was there for like 3 days or something.
Right.
And it was like the second you leave, you're like, I could probably sleep there if they'd let me. and there's something about it. When I got home, it's like, you know, when a place has a smell and like you smell that and you go back to that time in that place.
Sure.
Sun has this like dusty thing to it that you walk through the front door and it's like you transform, you're in a time machine. And everywhere I went, it's like I'd go to other studios and I'd hear other things and I just wouldn't get the same feeling. So I decided to take Maya, my wife, on an early honeymoon before the wedding, and we went to Memphis and New Orleans. So we went back to Sun again, and I tried to reconnect with the people I had talked to the fall before. And I said, you know, what's the possibility of recording here? How could I actually do this? And they said, well, you know, we're really booked up, but at the same time, if you keep trying and you're okay to come in at a weird time, or you can come last minute if we call you up, then, you know, it'll work. So I ended up having, you know, a friend help me get the budget together and ended up going down with the band. And I brought Dave McMichael, the bass player, and Jace Traz, the drummer, and Maya. And Maya and Dave did a lot of the driving because I'm a terrible, terrible driver and a nervous wreck. Driving through a rainstorm in Kentucky, by the way, is no easy feat. And I feel for every long-distance truck driver that's ever had to do that. That's horrible. So anyway, the best road trip we could have had, plus we got to record at Sun. So we went down there after hours. We recorded until probably 2 in the morning. And the engineers were absolutely fantastic. They were hilarious guys. If anybody that's listening feels like they want to do one of those dream come true trips, you know, bucket list trips, you got to go and record at least one song there. Try to get yourself in because it was a experience of a lifetime. And I mean, you're there in the studio, all the lights are down, and talk about nervous. I mean, I haven't felt nervous in a studio before because, again, you get to mess up, you get to erase your mistakes, you can go back and whatever, right? But this is the type of thing where we only had one night. We literally had, I think it was 5 or 6 hours to get the entire thing knocked out. And what we ended up doing with those tracks is we took them back to Toronto and we said, well, this could be an interesting Live Off the Floor album, but could we take it somewhere else? Could we do more with it? And that's when we ended up, I ended up hooking up with a producer that I had worked with a couple years before named Mo Berg. And Mo's from a band called The Pursuit of Happiness. And they had some, their hit song is called I'm an Adult Now, really, really big in Canada. And they worked with Todd Rundgren. So they're kind of in that classic rock camp, but Mo also has a really great ear for blues. So he said, you know, why don't I take this and turn it into something that you can have and be really proud of that will last, you know, for a long, long time. Something that doesn't end up being dated, something that, that we can put kind of a high-def touch on. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting, you know, a great engineer to work on it, Rob Nation as well, in London, Ontario, back in near my hometown. And they ended up, you know, bringing the Sun Studio sound into 2019.
Wow.
And I was so thrilled that we still have so much of that, that kind of bleed from all the instruments in Sun. The airy kind of overhead drum sounds are all there. Jerry Lee Lewis's piano, that was a thrill to get to use that. That's in the tracks as well.
Wow.
So we were able to kind of take a piece of that trip and then blend it with something modern so that we could have something that stood up. And it was just a dream come true, man. If I could spend, you know, the rest of my time there, I would, I'd be packing my bags. I love Canada, but at the same time, the blues scene in the States is just, it's incredible. It's like nothing else.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I consider myself lucky growing up in Chicago and then only, whatever, 9.5, 10 hour drive to Memphis. I've been there a couple times and I agree with everything you're saying. Even, you know, like the poverty and stuff. It's weird to drive around and see all that, but at the same time, you're like, this is the blues, you know?
This makes, well, you say this makes sense, right?
Right,
there's
yeah.
No, like, there's really sense, no yeah. faking it. It's not pretty. It's right. not, I don't know if you go there with expectations. It's not Nashville.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people think it's going to be like Nashville's little, you know, little sister or something. Mm. And it's Nashville's evil little sister. That's what it is. With a little more
Nashville's trashy cousin.
But Chicago, you mentioned, I love Chicago too. The Willie Dixon Blues Foundation, I mean, that's the old Chess Records building. Mm-hmm. They're doing a fantastic job there as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
100%. I actually proposed to my wife in Chicago at Kingston Mine.
Did you really? Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah. Joanna Connor was playing and it's like 3 a.m. and it's just the perfect time. So.
That's awesome. So you said they actually let you use Jerry Lee Lewis's piano?
Yeah. When the last session he had done there, he just decided that he was going to leave it. And that was kind of one of his favorite pianos that he had used throughout the years. And he actually burned his cigar into one of the lower keys.
Wow.
And just said, when anybody asked, just tell him the killer was here.
That's funny.
And it's just, you know, it was so authentic and so, it wasn't the best playing piano. I mean, my wife had to fight with that thing, but it's almost like, you're a guitar player and you get one of those really old Harmony or K guitars, something made in Chicago, then you have to fight with it to get what you want. And then it's more gratifying because you get a better sound and you feel like you've conquered it, you know? So that Jerry Lee piano, just amazing, just incredible. It's like the whole Sun Studio is like a working museum that they let you touch.
Yeah, that's awesome though. Was Maya nervous playing the piano?
Yes. Yeah, extremely. I mean, we were using all of Sam Phillips' mics, too. Before he passed away, I guess, they said that he donated a lot of the stuff. And his original console's there, too. So the console that he recorded, you know, That's All Right, Mama, on. And hearing it all out of the original mono playback speaker, too. I mean, it's just, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. Well, Sam, that's all I got for you. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk with me.
Oh, I was thrilled to hear from you. Thank you so much, and I hope your listeners enjoy. You got a great show.
I appreciate
it. Wish you
all
the best.
Thanks, Sam. You have a good one.
Stay in touch. Thanks.
I will.